Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now.
Good evening. This is We Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio network stations that focus on solutions for the Black community. Present Black Urban America. All you people that listen by laptop, if you want to join into the conversation, you dial 516-531-9540. That's 516-531-9540. Press 1. Our website is WeTalkProductions/team. The lineup, Mondays, we have Black Economic Freedom with Greg Ruffian. On Tuesday, we have myself. My name is Kenny Jones with Black Coast of Black Urban America. On Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michelle Williams. On Thursday, we have Port of Harlem with Wayne A. Young. And finishing up the week on Saturdays, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Sneed. Tonight's guest is a former congressional candidate of the 4th District in Georgia. And he ran on the campaign of the Green New Deal, Medicare for All, education reform, livable wages, criminal justice reform, women's rights, LGBTQ rights, and fight equality. He has a background of he's an engineer, and he does digital forensics, and he's a technical training specialist. I welcome you tonight with Mr. Antonio Hicks. Welcome to the show, Brother Antonio. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I hear you great. You know, I see a lot of people from the science, technical, mathematic, engineer community involving themselves in politics. And it used to be it was for lawyers, educators, even a few coaches, you know, dipped their hand in politics, and some businessmen. How come I see a lot of people from the STEM community trending into politics?
Well, I mean, first, I'm still a congressional candidate. I did sign up again, so I am running again for 2022. And to go back to your initial question, it's time for a change. I mean, we need more engineers in office. I mean, how are you creating policies on things? Because we're in the digital age now, so you're creating policies on things that's actually digital data and content, and you don't have an understanding of it. Yeah, I get the whole notion of lawyers having to understand policies, but I beg to differ. As an engineer, and always have been an engineer, we deal more with policies, creation, and solution solving than a lawyer does. And it's not to diminish a lawyer, because I still, even as old as I am, I want to go back and get a law degree outside of my other education. So it's nothing against lawyers. It's not a debate. It's just one I talked about with some of my other lawyer friends, is that as an engineer, we're taught to solve a problem because we reverse engineer something. We solve a problem. We learn how something works. Then we go back, figure out how we can make it better. And it gives us the ability to fix what was previously wrong with or enhance it to make it work even better than what it did before.
Hey, we need
so that's
more,
why you see a lot of us getting into it.
And we need more of our Black youth going into the STEM careers too.
Yeah.
You know, we need more young Black engineers, scientists, mathematicians, and technical people, like you said, the digital world. Now I want to get into the first issue, Black Recovery. According to NBC News, tens of millions of African Americans' whole economic livelihoods were upended this year, 2020. Experts says that it would take an aggressive approach from the federal government to address the horrors, the economic horrors that plague the Black community. What should some of these approaches consist of, according to you?
One thing we've learned from this pandemic is it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's a bad thing from the people that suffer from it, because I've had people that suffer from it and I've known some people that die from it. So, you know, my hearts and my thoughts, like even people say thoughts and prayers, my thoughts, and I send energy towards all those who have been afflicted by it, be it socially or economically, where you've lost your jobs because of this pandemic that's been caused. But it has affected us even more so, and even in a minority community, because a lot of us weren't making higher wages. So a lot of the jobs that were lost came from out of our communities, from warehouse work, construction work, even artistry, even in engineering and science and stuff, because those companies and those corporations that held us in those jobs, even the lower paying engineering jobs, decided they didn't need us anymore. And a lot of the jobs are being shipped and housed out overseas. So one of the big things that we can see that we should be seeing is more stimulus coming back towards our communities, because they were already in distress anyway, prior to the pandemic taking place. And even now after the pandemic taking place, we're in more need than anybody right now. And landlords don't care because they're still evicting us. So, and when I mean by stimulus, I do believe in reparations, but when I say reparations, I don't believe in cutting people a check. I believe in revitalizing and putting more businesses from us back into our own personal communities. So as opposed to us leaving the area to go shopping or leaving the area to go get something to get food and whatnot, they should be provide low income and actually tax-free loans to individuals in the area that have businesses, so we can actually start rebuilding neighborhoods. We can start bringing in small businesses. I don't care if they're constructions, outside of the barbershops and the churches that we typically see, more things dealing with computers, even hair salons, and dealing with more education, even education itself, like community, more community-based colleges within our own areas. So not only will you get something to learn from how to feed your mind, but you'll also get learned in the aspect of how to feed your pockets too.
Right, right. Do you think that that we should get into land ownership and property ownership?
Absolutely. Yes, I mean, like we've seen now in South Georgia, they're trying to build the next Black Wall Street. And, I mean, you know, it's a long ways off, but I believe that it's a great turning point that they've actually come to. A lot of families, I think it was 10 different families, came together to actually buy land to build out that community. So I always say ownership as opposed to renting. A lot of us don't have the ability to do that, let be the income or even the credit to do that. But I always say ownership, only because equity is the biggest stake in anything, which is how we fell behind. And like in my podcast, I talk about the road to Black economic development, how we fell behind compared to everybody else because we were prevented from actually owning land. So I think, you know, people should work towards buying as opposed to renting. And if you got to rent, be a property that you own that you're renting out to somebody else.
Right. And I want to get back to labor for a second. Since we do have people that are, you know, not that skillful, don't have a lot of skills, but are somewhat unskilled. But a Valerie Wilson, economist for the Economic Policy Institution, she's a sister, she said that it is not a matter of experience, not a matter of difference in education, nor presumed to be an indicator of skill. It's a reflection of discrimination in the labor market, which I want to hold you right there, because this is going to lead to my next issue that I want to bring up. Do you think there's discrimination in the labor market?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's discrimination across the board. I mean, even in corporate America, I myself am a corporate person. I've been held back from jobs because of how I look. Even growing up in the good old South before it became diverse as it is right now, you know, you're only allowed up to a certain point. And which is why I said, you know, low level engineers, you do have low level engineers that are in corporate America that they work on, let's say, reprogramming or work on like front end development or work on repair lines or out in the field working on like actual the field stuff. But there are higher paying jobs that pay more money and they only allow a certain amount of people up in there because of discrimination. So when you talk about labor itself, actual physical labor, yeah, because they want cheap labor. And when we come in, you know, we want to get paid like anybody else. We want to get paid our fair share. But they'd rather go and get, you know, cheaper labor from somebody else. So there is discrimination when it comes to that.
And so how do, so one way to get past that is just what you said is to own our own businesses, reparation, tax-free loans, and what have you. So, but also I just want to add, we got to put some control in our own hands, you know, because we could own our own businesses, we could be entrepreneurs, but if we don't have any control and distribution, it's just like we still got to pay them to own our own business.
And, right, and that's when it comes to you talking about securing loans. So where are you getting the loans from? Are you getting a loan from a black-owned bank? So if you're trying to keep everything within a community, we need to own all key aspects of that business itself. So we need to own the banks that come along with it. We need to have politicians in place that create policies that work better for us, that I hate to say look like us as well, too. And we need to be able to actually have buy the supplies from black-owned business so you can keep it real cyclical. You can have everything coming in and out of our own hands. But like as you say now, when you go to secure some of those things, it's still determined upon other individuals that don't look like you. They're still measuring you based upon your skin tone or based upon what area code or zip code you live in to how they're going to secure the loans they're going to give out to you and how the money's going to be distributed.
Yeah. And I want to continue on this recovery process from the pandemic. You know, I just want to give a little history. During the Great Depression, Katrina, Flint, Michigan, the black recovery had always been forgotten during the recovery process. Do you think that the black community could be forgotten during the COVID-19 recovery process? Or do you think it's going to be a recovery process? And if it is, do you think the black community is going to be forgotten like in other tragedies in this country?
Fortunately, I want to be optimistic this time around. Normally, I would say yes, because, I mean, history speaks, right? Normally, I would say yes, it's going to be forgotten about like anything else, because they only typically come to us when they're trying to pander us to get our vote. But because of what so much has happened this year alone and how it has affected us as minorities and diminished how we've been able to live, you see now in administration how they're appointing more black people and putting more women in place to actually help out within it, the government aspect of it. So I do think that going forward, there will be a key take on people looking at how they can better help us out, especially, and I know a lot of people don't like Kamala, but I still think that we're going to hold her to the fire, and I hope she's going to do what's right. So I want to be optimistic. Normally I'm pessimistic, and I want to be optimistic this time around, and I believe that going forward, there will be some change. Good change, not bad change.
So, you know, history always repeats itself, and you know, the United States has a track record. I just identified three major tragedies in this country where it gotten worse, and even with this pandemic, we're three times higher than our white counterparts to get this. I just want to introduce you to the host of The Cutting Edge, Bishawn Williams. Do you have any question for distinguished Antonio Hicks?
Yes, I do. And hello, and how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm great. There was a survey from the Center for Congressional and Presidential Studies found that young black Americans tend to view Democrats much less favorably and Republicans more favorably than their older peers. Why is that?
Well, that's a loaded question. So the problem has always been, it was something I've preached about a lot during my congressional, even now, outside of my run before I start back up again is that, like I said a couple of seconds ago, is that they pandered to the black community for our vote. They needed us always to secure an election, even black politicians. But just because they skin folk don't mean it really down for you too. So, but we've never seen a change within our community. I mean, how, because the last show, I know I came in the last part of it, kind of got y'all a little bit upset. The last part, it's like I said last time, so how many times have we put people into office? I don't care on the local level. I don't care on the congressional level, which is federal level, and nothing's ever changed within our community. We haven't seen any policies that come out. And I get that you can't write a certain bill to actually put money down in our pockets, but you can make sure that it's
they
evenly
distributed.
They did
it for distributed. The Japanese. They did it for the Jews. They do it for every other culture.
They do. But we're talking about what realistically can get passed. Because if you look at the history, when they were talking about getting reparations passed initially, nothing that you present as far as reparations to give anything out to the black community will pass. It might pass now, but it won't pass on the Senate.
I don't know. So I don't know, because of what you just said, you know, and the track record and what I just read, you know, and the second part of our discussion, do our vote really count in the presidential election? You know, it really doesn't benefit. Our vote really doesn't benefit individually or collectively. It may benefit nationally. It may benefit the presidential election. But when it does, it never, ever trickled down to our communities. For example, okay, have your life changed after Obama was president for 8 years? Now, he was supposed to be a black president. Has the black community changed after 8 years of Obama?
So you have to break that down. So that's not an easy question to answer. And so you can break that down to certain parts. If you knew some of the programs that was put in place by President Obama, from student loans to forgiveness and things like that, and you took advantage of it, it did help you out. Now, when you're talking about low-income communities, I'm not even going to say housing projects, I'm just saying low-income neighborhoods, suburban areas and whatnot, did things change within those areas? No, it did not. But you're talking about from a presidential level. The one thing that matters the most when it comes to our areas are your local governors. So we have, that's why when I say does your vote matter, and why I talked about it too when I was, you know, do my thing, is your vote matters, and it shows you how it matters now, because they came out and pandered to you to get you to show up to vote and get somebody else in the office. So it shows you that we do have a power. Now, can we create policy to help change us? Yes, but it has to be done locally. You need local commissioners. You need your local tax commissioners. You need local senators. You need people in your local area to actually create the bills and policies to push down into your area and change up the forefront of what businesses are allowed. Because in other communities outside of black communities and white communities, let's call it what it is, in white communities, they only allow a certain amount of the same business within a certain mile radius. Whereas in our community, it's end all be all. If you show up, we don't care what it is, which is why we have a lot of buy here, pay here, not buy place, but Dollar Generals and things like that, to where we can't even get decent food places, establishments out there, or banks and things of that nature. So if we focus only on presidential, no, because it's all promises. Because, I mean, what was Iran on hope, right? Hope and change. Well, hope gave you the idea and the vision that you can seek a higher level of office, and you can push out like your change as far as the vision goes. But if you want to actually see physical change, you want to see physical change within your community, you have to show up for your local levels, and you have to show up every 2 years for your congressional levels. So you have to hold these people accountable. Just like we're giving performance evaluations on a job, we have to do the same thing for these politicians. If that person is not doing what they need to have done and showing you the policies that they're presenting to be voted on, because I get it, not every policy is going to get make it to the floor, but they can still tell you what they're doing. That's the whole purpose of being transparent. They can tell you, we're in the age of technology, right? Everybody got Twitter fingers. If they can get on Twitter, they can get on Facebook, and they can present to you what policies they're trying to push forth to make change in all communities, even in black, specifically black communities. And if they are not pushing those things forward, It is your job, our job, to get to that poll the next time, the next season come around, and vote them out and put somebody else in the place.
I just want to ask you. How come, and be sure I'm going to give it back to you after I ask this question. How come black officials are afraid to put in bills that is specifically for us? How come we always got to say, oh, you know, I'm the senator for all the people. I'm not just a senator just for my people and everything. Well, you get these other people from other cultures. They are representing their own. And with the exception of us, how come our black officials, which is going to be next, the next segment, how come our black official never represent? I haven't heard from the black caucus in over 20 years. How come the black officials go on the floor, push bills that represent us?
It's about image, right? So what's the main thing that people always say? They don't want to portray you as an angry black man, right? Or angry black woman. So you have to come in with this, which is why we always say we code switch. So you have to come in projecting yourself in a different manner so you can be recognized as somebody of having a level of intelligence. So we have to justify our purpose of being there. Now, I'm with you on that 100%. I don't fall in that category. I'm very vocal about who I am and what I want to protect and what I who I want to see lifted up and
what changes. And pushing bills that represented his community in Harlem, which was all black
right.
then. Al Clay Powell, they had no problem. But back then, they were saying the Negro. They had any problem saying, this bill is for Negroes. He didn't sugarcoat it, call it a civil rights bill or a voter rights bill. He said, this bill is for my people.
Right. That's a question that I honestly can't answer, but it's a question that is felt and it's the truth. I mean, because it's not just in politics, it's in corporate America too. It's across the board. When you see anybody of any color that has power, they're afraid to speak up for their own because they're afraid of how they're going to be portrayed and how they're going to look. And they'll say, I'm just trying to play the game. And the only way I can play the game is if I fit in.
Are you ready for a caller? We have a caller. Welcome to Black Earth America, 8051. You're on the air. Do you have a question for our guest?
No, I don't have a question this day, but I'm enjoying what I'm hearing.
Oh, I'm glad you're enjoying everything.
You have a comment?
Yes, I am.
Go ahead.
Well, I'm afraid to comment because I had come in late, really just now. And all I was going to say, if I had been on at the beginning, I think the black vote counts up to a certain point. I think they use the beginning to get them elected, and then once they get elected, they tend to forget who we are. And that's something that we need to deal with straight up and say, hey, and stop letting them use our vote for their benefit.
I agree with you,
us.
Which is why I was saying
that had to be on us. And one thing I'm sorry for cutting you off, Brother Antonio. Is one thing I commend Ice Cube. I don't care what you say about him going to Trump or whatever. He went to Biden first. With a contract he worked on with Dr. Claude Anderson, this is a bad economic dude, and with other economic scholars, he did this all come from his brain. You know, he was just a vehicle. He was, but there were other black economic scholarships that developed this contract, 13-point contract. He went to Biden first, and Biden said, wait till after election? Nah, man, we got to discuss this now, because if you don't handle it now, after election, they don't even have to deal with you because they already won.
Well, it's not even just that, though. It's so when he presented his when he presented his platinum plan, the whole purpose wasn't just I'm gonna work with the Democratic Party or I'm gonna work with the Republican Party. It's I'm working with whoever's in place so we can see change within our community, which is why I don't understand the uproar that he got. He was trying to push a policy in place to help out the community as a whole.
Brother
it wasn't
Tonio,
about
he
trying
got
to come and appeal to the Democrats.
He got it, matter of fact, on a weekly or every other day basis, he was on the internet explaining what he was doing and what he was trying to accomplish. And you know something else? I haven't heard anything from Biden about that contract.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Okay. Go ahead, so Sean. Okay, you have another question for Brother Antonio?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. Okay, my other question is, would you be willing, as a politician, to sign a contract stating what would you do, what you would do for your constituents if they put you in office?
Would I be willing to? Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
So so I don't know when you did the research on me, how much of my background you checked into. And the reason why I got into office and got interested in the office is because of not just because I'm an engineer and I want to create change and I have the skill sets to do it. It's because of all the things that I've gone through in my own personal life, especially growing up here in the South. So I'm a Georgia boy, born and raised, come out of Macon, Georgia, and grew up in Stone Mountain. And if anybody, and I'm 42 years old, so if anybody knew anything about Stone Mountain,
you grew up in Stone Mountain, Georgia, I read.
I grew up in Stone Mountain, Georgia, where they had Confederate reenactments at Stone Mountain Park, and they were still burning crosses out there. And if you went out there during one of those Confederate reenactments, you were threatened with your life if you didn't leave the area. So I know all too well about racism. I know all too well about things that's been taking place and been segregation and whatnot, even at 42 years old, growing up here in Georgia. So, but what got me into office and my care about people is the fact that I did grow up in the South. I come from a neighborhood where we all took care of one another. Nobody went hungry because if one person didn't have something, everybody was there to give it to them. And my grandmother was one of those people. And then it passed down to my mother and all my aunts and whatnot. And so what got me along that path was I went through homelessness for 2 years. I lost my job. I went through a separation. I lost my kids and everybody. My wife, she left me. She went out of state. So I went through a time of going through having no job. I was sleeping on somebody's floor for 2 years. And then when I did have to work, I had to walk because I have a vehicle. I walked to work through pouring down rain and downpours because I want to make sure I take care of my kids. So any little bit of money I had, I sent it up to make sure my ex at the time was taking care of my boys. So to go through all that stuff and deal with depression, suicidal thoughts and whatnot, and then to overcome it and seeing what's being afflicted by our people now and how nobody's stepping up. Not just nobody, some people are, but not a lot of people, especially around my district where I grew up at, is not stepping up to make change. And I'm seeing homelessness on the rise. I'm seeing suicide deaths on the rise. I'm seeing people not concerned about their health because we don't have access to proper health care. I'm saying we don't have edible foods out in that area. Everything is all processed foods. Having gone through all that and come out of it, I'm like, it's time for somebody to get in office that actually care about the people. So when you ask me, will I sign a contract, you can hold me to a contract because I will sign a contract because we need people in office that genuinely care, not just as a spokesperson, not get up in somebody's pulpit and preach to you just to get you to shout and clap and show up to vote for me. And like you said, once I'm in office, I forget about you and I make excuses. No, that is not the case. I've gone through enough stuff and I've seen so much sorrow, not only from myself, from other people around me that was afflicted by things too. If we need people that care about people, that's actually there to fight for the people. That's what prompted me to get off my high horse as an engineer and come down to help actually help out the communities. Even in doing all those things as an engineer too, I was a vice president of a nonprofit when I was working at the company I was at before. I did a lot of nonprofit work working for United Way. I was helping out homeless shelters and women's and shelters and stuff when I was doing it at this local church I was singing at and on the praise team. So I've always been active and my heart has always been for the people itself because we don't have a lot of people that care about the people and stuff. Look at what's taking place within our community right now. 40 million plus people are without jobs. We got over almost 300,000 people that have lost their lives. 14 million people are afflicted by this thing right now that's being sick and overcapacitated in hospitals, and we still don't have any relief packages taking place. Banks were not shut down to prevent them from seizing loans and stuff for your mortgages. And then rent people, the banks that held on to the rents for your landlords did not stop them from collecting their money. So landlords having to do what they have to do and come and kick you out of your place so they can try to get somebody in so they can recoup some of their money. Things were not put into place to help the people out. So when you ask me, will I hold me to a contract, that is personal to me. Yes, I will sign it. I will prick my finger and sign it in blood because we need people that care about people. I don't care about your religion. I don't care about your sexuality. You are a human being on this earth. And you, everybody needs some form of help. In some form of time or another, everybody needs help. So, yes, I will sign a contract.
Hey, and the way you...
I'm sorry?
I said I believe you would.
We have another caller. Hold on for a minute. We have you on the line, 0528. Welcome to Black Urban America.
Yes, Mr. Hicks. This is a Decatur resident here. I have a question. This is dealing with policy, I guess, Democratic. My question is this. Do you foresee a problem with President Trump trying to derail the policies of the Democratic Party after we take official office after January 20th, with the way he's derailing the situation as far as saying he's won the election and continues to fight it in court?
Do I see him trying to derail it? I see him trying. I mean, he's trying now. I mean, especially in Georgia, how much money we've spent for a recount. So we don't have that in place where he has to pay for recounts. We have to pay for that. Everybody tries. Will it happen? No, I don't think anything is going to happen. I think the Republicans have gotten what they want out of him, and they've bled that peach dry. So, you know, there's nothing else they can get from him anymore, which is why they've tossed their hands up, and he's out of commission. Now, they are scared of him because of his political power, but his political power don't hold too much influence when it comes to Congress or when it comes to the senators. Hence, when he came down here, how he didn't focus on any of the two senators he should have been representing. He was mainly talking about himself. It was almost, an hour and a half rally he held here, but they only had 2 minutes on the stage. So, no, I don't think that anything that he wants to do is going to make any changes when it comes to, you know, policies and then changing anything for us. What I need to see happen, though, when you say you're out of Decatur, Georgia?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
So what I need to see happen out of Decatur when it comes to our local elected officials is to get our water and our sewer straightened out. So now I grew up here. So a lot of the things these people are seeing now where our sewage is having raw sewage dumped into our water system, and then the people that's been placed, they've gotten over $330 million from the federal government to repair sewer lines, and that has gone towards downtown Decatur where it's going through gentrification and not to the areas where as far as Snapfinger and south end of DeKalb. I need to see those policies changed up. I need to see, we have a sheriff coming in now, and I need everybody to hold her accountable so they can stop the over-policing of our communities and locking our prison system, locking our people up to overpack the prison system. Because if you come from Georgia, then you obviously know about the DeKalb County prison that was heavily overly populated to where they had to ship them out to other prisons, state of Georgia, until they start releasing people on low-level crimes because they just couldn't do it anymore. So at a local level, bump the federal level. I think we need to hold our local officials accountable, especially in Decatur.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Ms. Hicks.
You're welcome. Thank you for the question.
Okay. Thank you for calling. Okay. Yes. Our local officials everywhere. You know, they bite the bug of, you know, making promises and not keeping them and just playing with, just sticking to the machine. How can we hold local elected officials accountable? What are some of the strategies that we have to implement?
So here's one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I understand why people don't run for local seats. They don't pay enough. Like you couldn't survive off of the income that you get from a lower level seat. The most they might pay is like $45,000 or $35,000. And believe me, I understand we have families out there now trying to survive off of that alone. But you're talking about you want to get somebody educated to go into their job and not make that much. that's why a lot of people that you see in those positions, they already have businesses. They're already millionaires. They're already affluent. And they get in those positions to continue to change policy up to help them out in their business. So one of the key things that we can do and that we should be looking going ahead is starting like funds. Like, I don't care if it's a GoFundMe or trust funds or whatever from the community itself, to where we can start finding people and developing them to put them in office and make sure the community has their back and supporting them and their family needs as long as we're seeing change. So that is the biggest thing, because a lot of people won't run for those low-level seats because they don't pay a lot of money. I mean, seriously, if you're a lawyer and, you know, in the private sector, you're pulling in $150,000, $200,000, you're going to leave your private sector job to go work in the local capital for only $15,000, $20,000? You're going to want something. You're going to try to get something out of it, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing we talk about with dealing with the police force. If you're getting paid from the federal government for the police force, you know, depending on what area you're coming from, you're not making that much money. Whereas you go to a privatized area, if you're from Georgia, like Gwinnett County, and those privatized cities, they're starting their police officers off at $65,000, $70,000, and the more education you have, the more money you get. So we have to, so we want to really start. The biggest thing is, if we want to see change in our community, we have to take care of our community, including our elected officials, which are supposed to be our leaders. They are supposed to be our leaders and provide guidance and policy on what can help benefit us as a whole.
Michonne, go ahead. You have a question for Brother Tony?
Do you think the Electoral College should be abolished?
Oh, God, yes.
That been debate like 30 years. That been debate for 30 years, man.
So
yeah.
Why was the Electoral put in place? So they put the Electoral in place because not everybody lives in a highly populated area. So they wanted to make sure everybody had enough people in place to help show that their vote and their voice actually matters. That's not the case anymore. It is time to go. You can't have an electorate that says one thing, but the popularity vote says another. It is, and then they actually changed the policy up that if the electorate does not agree with the decision that the popular vote made, they can say, okay, well, we like this candidate more so than what you do. You're deciding out of ignorance or whatever, we're going to vote for this person because that's who we like and that's who we love, which is what we saw in Trump. Yes, it is time for it to go. It is time for change across the board. It is time to get out of the old, because if some of y'all Christian, y'all understand you can't put new wine in old wineskin. It just ain't even going to work. It is time to rebuild the system. And the only way you can do that, you got to put new people in place. I don't care how old you are. I'm not an ageism person. You need fresh blood in place that actually come from the areas that have actually been through something. You can't grow up with a silver spoon and tell me that you can, you understand my struggle when you've never been through struggle. And it's not to say that you can't speak over me, but you don't really know the struggle unless you have to deal with it yourself. And you understand when people are going through a trying time, like in Katrina, when we have other natural disasters that take place and there are no roads to recovery for us, that you don't see the plight that comes out of that and the struggle from people trying to suffer and take care of their families and having to be redirected to other places they never even grew up from. So we need people in place that have suffered and that can actually have the people in their heart and not their own personal interests, not getting there for a title just so they can have a title and walk around with their chest stuck out. I don't care about that at all. Like, I don't care about people calling me Congressman Hicks. It's not even about that at all. My job is to serve the people because the people need to be served, not me and my own selfish needs. The people need to be taken care of, and that's what we need to be doing going forward. So we need new people in office.
I have another question.
Go ahead.
What? Okay. Do you have any policies, or is there any policies in place to help the homeless or the people that are mentally ill in your area, or, you know, services to help them?
No, but see, that was a part of the Green New Deal too, though. So a lot of people haven't even read the Green New Deal because they went by what mainstream media told them. A lot of those key factors were put inside of the Green New Deal, making sure that you had actual livable wage paying jobs, making sure jobs actually was coming out to your areas, and to help you out. I mean, because a lot of us, we deal with mental health because of a lack of money, right? That's one of the biggest things when you see involving relationships or anything. Because if you can't feed yourself and you can't feed your family, that hurts you. So they have cut funding. Like, that was one of the biggest things that Kemp cut funding for, was mental health here in the state of Georgia. And we saw homeless shelters. One of the biggest homeless shelters we had here in Atlanta, they closed it down. They stopped funding for it and closed it down. Now, what do you think happened with all those thousands and thousands of homeless people that used to go there just to sleep and get in a hot bed to lay in at night? What happened to them? They had to go outside of the area. Like here in when we had the Olympics come here in 96, they got rid of all the urban housing, the projects and stuff. What happened to those people? They pushed them out to the suburban areas. And now people complaining about crime in their areas. Well, I'm like, you didn't bring jobs back in there. So you pushed the poor people out. You pushed them into suburbia. So now they're out panhandling. They're asking for work. And then they finally were able to get a low-income loan to get them a house, but they still don't have enough money to buy things to properly take care of the house. So now you want to complain about that. You don't want to give tax relief to businesses to entice them to come into your area so you can have people don't have a commute. Like here in Georgia, I have to commute an hour and a half to get to work. And you don't, and that means all my tax dollars are going towards the area where I work at. And they can actually get a tax break to have people work in those offices in those areas where I live at. It's in the suburbs. It's actually in rural, and where I'm at is in rural Georgia. And that's a lot of people forget about rural, the rural places of the country. They don't have access to high-speed internet. Some don't have access to local hospitals. A hospital is 30 miles away from where they are. And then when they do have hospitals, it's like one of those the little pop-up places that you see. So then to see an actual ER, like we're seeing now with the pandemic, they have to send them out even further places, like it was taking place out in Texas. So they do put policies in place, but they cut them because those are non-essential type things. It's a waste of money. But they use that as talking points, same as the military. Oh, we have the military in our best interest. But when the military comes back home and they're suffering from PTSD, they don't have transferable skill sets that they can use in corporate jobs. So they're working at low-income places. They don't even take care of them. And then when you send them to the VA is so corrupt, they don't even properly take care of them. They use them as testing dummies.
VA is terrible. I hear a lot of veterans complain about the VA. Now, let's look at Joe Biden appointees, these new officials that are coming into office. Now, I forgot, on my last week's show, I quoted Joe Biden saying that he's going to, on November 8th, he acknowledged the black vote, the African-American vote, stood up again for me. I put in quotation mark. That's what he said. So let's say, and he said he's not going to forget us. All right, let's look at now. He has to appoint 24 positions. Okay, so far he has appointed 6 blacks in each position. He got the one guy for defense. He has a black woman, Fudge, for HUD.
Mm-hmm.
He has a black woman, Rouse, the economic, I think it's economic. I did right. An attorney general. No, he's a candidate. He has 3 black White House advisors. Sanders, Richmond, and Tina Floyd Fanoy. I hope I say her name right. Now, in other areas, you got the VP, okay. Agriculture, you got 1 black candidate, right? In commerce, he has another black candidate. In education, out of 4 candidates, he got 1 black candidate. In interior, he got 6 candidates. Out of 6, he got 1 black candidate. In transportation, he had 3 candidates, no blacks. For the VA, what we just discussed about, and there's a lot of black veterans out there, no black candidates for the VA spot. For CIA, there's 2 candidates. There's no black candidates. And for the EPA, he got 6 candidates. There's 1 black candidate there. And for Attorney General, the black candidate is Jed G. Johnson. So he got 8 candidates for the remaining 18 positions. And he already have 6 black appointees. How do you think he's doing? Is he living up to what he said?
So now, I think he's trying to be fair.
He got more Latinos. He got some Pakistanis too. Well, I should say they're from India. You know, he has some India, Pakistan, Latinos. But I you know,
right.
I focus on black folks. You know, I'm not worried about other culture. I worry about my culture. All right. He said on November the 8th. He's going to look out for black folks because black folks stood up for him. Is he fulfilling what he's saying so far? If you had a grade, okay, you're a scholar. If you had a grade, A, B, C, or D, what would you give him so far?
I'm going to give him a B so far. He's making his sound. He's making his. Hold on.
He's making his cabinet. What would you rate him, Sean? What would you rate him?
A D.
A B?
I gave him a D.
You said a D?
A D.
A D?
I said a
well,
D.
He pointed 6 black people.
No, I'm curious. I got to ask a question now. Why would you rate him? Why would you rate it a D?
Because you know what? If black people had his back, I think he should appoint at least 50% of his cabinet or his appointees should be black. Minimum.
But that's the thing, though. I'm giving him a chance because he still has Supreme Court.
Maybe there's no qualified person for the CIA because you know that's white class down there. But the VA, well, I saw there was no black candidate. That might change now. That might change because he got to the end of December. No, he got to.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So to give him a grade now. It's like we're going by our own personal feelings, which is fine. But
I'm going by your feel. I'm going by the data.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I'm giving him a break right now. Right now it's diverse. So can I say there's change in what it was before and prior to that? Yes, it is diverse now.
But because
so
with Trump, he only had one brother. And that was that boy.
Oh, we ain't talking about that clown at all.
At least in every category,
he does with the exception of the, and I'm shocked at the VA. There's so many generals and black doctors in the VA. I am shocked. I'm not shocked by this, but I'm shocked by transportation. I'm shocked by that.
I'm shocked by the Pentagon.
The Pentagon? We got the
Pentagon. He put a black man over the Pentagon, yes.
We got Austin.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm shocked. I'm surprised he put a black man over the Pentagon.
We've been fighting. Brothers and sisters been fighting for the United States military since they've been in the United States military. And I could go by my own family. I got a family member that fought in every war that this country had. So you're damn right. Give us the top seat. Right, that's right.
I'm not going to even sit here and say that I'm a Joe Biden fan. I will go on the record saying that, and I don't care about calling. And I know you're not accusing me of that. I'm just saying in general. I'm coming out as a candidate myself, and I don't care about disrespecting this past president because he don't deserve any respect. I come from the streets. You want respect, you got to give respect. And he ain't gave no respect. So I'm going to call him the clown until I leave this earth. And he will never be considered to be a president at all.
They used to make fun of Trump in the New York papers all up in the 80s and 90s. But like you guys, you come from a data-driven field. I'm just going by the numbers. And I could say in every category, with the exception of 2 or 3, okay, that transportation, the VA and the CIA, okay, he does have a black candidate for the post. You got a candidate, you know, and it's up to the candidates to go up in there and with the plan to outdo the other candidates.
Right.
So, and energy, no blacks. And energy, no blacks. Again, that's a science field. And we just said in the beginning of the discussion, we need more young brothers and sisters in the STEM field, the science, technology, engineering, mathematics. And that's energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I could see that. And I could see the CIA. But transportation VA, no. No blacks. But that could change within the next 30 days because he got 30 days to put his whole cabinet together. And so far, I mean, if you look at his White House staff, he got three blacks. Tina said
technically, I mean, he's supposed to, and I don't mean to cut you off, he's supposed to, but you can see from his past administration, he didn't fill up all of his cabinet picks. So he has a little bit more time than that. That's what I'm like. So he still has time to add more people on to, you know, candidates that he can look at. So I'm still hard on him, but yeah. I'm gonna try to give him a fair share for right now. Because I was hard on him because I was not a vital person.
He has a black woman running the UN named Greenfield. She's a sister.
Mm-hmm.
So I forgot to mention her. So but. He only, you know how many brothers he had? He only got two black men in his whole cabinet so far. That could change too.
I mean, he even considering Keisha Lance Bottom. He considering our mayor.
Yeah, well, he gave that spot to Fudge. Mayor Bottoms was being a candidate for HUD, you know,
mm-hmm.
but he gave that spot to Fudge, another sister or whatnot. So, but I only see two black men. That's Austin and Cedric, the White House advisor. And I will not be surprised there will not be any more black men on his staff. And if it's going to be any black folks, it's going to be women. Because black women did come out in millions and put the
right
guy in office.
And that's why I say I can't beat him down too bad because the black community are already tearing him up. I mean, they're already tearing him up. They tore him up in his face when he was out on the campaign trail.
Men into prison. And you know what else people forgot to bring up? I didn't forget. And Rashawn could bear witness on a couple occasions on my shows. I'll never forget what he did to Anita Hill. When Anita Hill brought charge up on Clarence Thomas, that is a Supreme Court justice right now. I mean, he dogged Anita Hill with the type of question that he asked her and whatnot. No support. She was out there by herself. I mean, she's still teaching at Stanford, but wow. I mean, no support. No support whatsoever. No compassion. And he put a million brothers with his and call us super predators. And then he's gonna tell Charlamagne the God, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. That I found that offensive. But nobody like that boy on what's his name? He's an alpha. I'm not one of them Greeks, but he always bragging about he's an alpha. What's his name? Oh, God. Well, he's a big Biden supporter, and he overlooked a lot of stuff with these Democrat Party. Now,
he's talking about Van Jones?
No. What is his name? What is his name? He always on YouTube. Big guy. He always wear the...
Okay.
The scarf around his neck. You come on CNN all the time. Not Van Jones, the other guy, short, chubby guy.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
I can't think of his name either.
Yeah. So let's look at it. You know, it's one thing I'm worried about. is one thing I worried about. And I got to praise Trump for this. Because of Trump, white supremacy theories and philosophy, it woke us up. It woke us up. We started organizing. People start talking about becoming the entrepreneurs. People start talking about reparation. People talk about separation. People are really looking at different avenues how to benefit the black community. And I'm hoping that we don't go back to sleep. Because we will sleep for a while. We will sleep for a while. You know, and we were told anything, we fell for anything, and now we are questioning everything that anybody tell us. The only thing that I'm a little upset about is that we talk about through our vote count, we permitted our vote to be used again. You know, we didn't put any restrictions on our vote. If you want our vote, if you want, none of the black politicians did this. If you want our vote, this got to be on the table, that got to be on the table, this got to be on the table. If this not on the table, if we don't say anything about this, you don't have our vote, and we go back to our communities and say, no vote. Also, Biden had not mentioned reparations. He had not mentioned any prison reform, none of that are involved in our communities. I just had to get that out. You know, I just hope we don't go to sleep. I just hope that, you know, like you said, we hold these people accountable. We got a couple minutes left. Anything you want to end up on, Brother Antonio?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I want to say is that, you know, the whole topic of it, does your vote even matter? Your vote does matter. And I need everybody to continue to show up, regardless of what you believe as far as you being forgotten about, and you're nobody, because you vote for somebody, they don't come back to take care of you. That is fine. It's no different than a bad relationship. Cancel that person out and bring somebody else new into the house. Your vote matters, and your vote matters so much so that they will do anything and everything to come to you to make sure they get it. They will feed you all kind of lies. They will change the system up to prevent you from voting. So if your vote didn't matter, the system wouldn't work as hard as to show you it did not. So, yes, I need everybody to continue to show up for your local elections. I need you to show up for your federal elections every 2 years, not every 4 years, every 2 years, and hold these people accountable the same way you hold businesses accountable when they don't get your food right or when somebody treats you bad the wrong way and you want to cuss them out and fight them over little things. I need you to hold these people accountable because it is because of them your community has not seen any improvement. So get out there. Vote if you can. If you're afraid to get out, and I'm understanding that too, make sure that you've already registered for your absentee ballot, and you can mail that in today as well too. So make sure you show up to vote. And if you live in the state of Georgia, make sure you show up for the election to run off in January to vote, so we can overturn that Senate. Now you might not like I like one of the candidates. You might not like some of the candidates, but we need the Senate under new control because we need new leadership in the Senate. And we need you all, just like you voted for this presidential election. I'm sorry?
They don't change when he gets in. Okay, Brother Antonio, that's it for tonight. And sharing this information and your insight on voting and the recovery and what have you. I really thank you. It has been very
important. If I can leave it one thing, too.
Go ahead.
You can follow up on me at AntonioHicksForCongress.com. That's AntonioHicksForCongress.com. My campaign is starting back up again in January, and I am working to change over Georgia's Congressional District 4 and cause it to be a virus so we can change up the rest of the state and the rest of this country, because I am an advocate for the people because I am the people. So thank you. Thank you for having me on your show.
No problem. And with that, everyone, tune in to the Cutting Edge tomorrow with me, Sean Williams. As always, I'm going to end. I am because we are. We are because I am. Everybody have a good week.